Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast, a podcast about expanding your creative capacity. Each week, we interview inspiring creatives to help you grow your freelance career. All right, let's get into the episode. Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Andrea Mejia Madriz, and I'm a part of the Artist Marketing and Partnerships team here at Closer and Closer. And as always, I have my wonderful co-host here with me, Dave Arcade.
That's true. I am Dave Arcade. I am an artist on the Closer and Closer roster, but enough about me because it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Simone Tai is a British meditation teacher and public speaking coach based in LA, where she lives with her husband, Sean. Simone left a 20-year career in TV to teach meditation full-time and began her coaching business at the start of the pandemic. Simone now runs courses in mindfulness, public speaking, and video content creation. Her clients range from solo entrepreneur, ready to transform their speaking skills and online presence, to big TV production and companies looking to support their teams with the valuable life skills. With the valuable life skills, apparently. That was a mouthful. Sorry, I probably botched a bunch of those words. But Simone, welcome.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, guys. Beautiful introduction, Dave.
It's probably going to rank one of the best ever in podcast history. We'll check the podcastintros.com after this, see where it ranks.
Yeah, perfect. Simone, we're so excited to have you. And I think, you know, for a lot of artists, speaking and meditation is something that like is a really helpful tool, like having a speaking coach and being into meditation, being in tune with themselves. And we've done an episode before on meditation with Kelsey Melton, who you know. But I think it's going to be such an interesting conversation today to like talk about how the two work together. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, good to be here, guys. Yeah, no, it's really nice. Thank you for inviting me. Love Kelsey.
Of course. Thank you for being here. Love Kelsey. What a woman.
Let's just a note on that real quick, because this is probably more important than what we're going to talk about today. Kelsey, if you're listening, it still hurts my feelings that I follow you on Instagram and you don't follow me.
Dave, that's a call out. Yeah. Those are fighting words.
That's what the whole podcast is about. It's that it's a setup.
Just calling out the people that have wronged you in life.
I'm sorry. I'm a derailer. Go back to what you guys were talking about.
No, you're so fine. So I think just to start out, because reading through your intro, I think it's so interesting that you started at the beginning of the pandemic. And I kind of just want to hear more about how you got into both meditation and coaching and where you find the two intersect and how you kind of took this on as your full-time gig.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm like, okay, there's so many stories here. Long story short, give you the highlights.
Yeah.
Meditation was something that came to me probably about 14 years ago. I was in the midst of my TV career and it was all consuming. I was a TV freelancer, so it would be going from job to job, you know, and kind of working these ridiculous hours, sometimes I worked, and I'm not bragging, we used to do on a show called Big Brother, a 27-hour shift.
Holy crap. Oh,
of course. Yeah, we know. I know all about Big Brother. Yeah. My roommate is a big fan.
I was a huge fan of that show.
So you can imagine it was just bizarre. And so that was kind of, that was an odd situation. But then typically it would be, you know, 12, 14-hour shifts. And I felt overwhelmed, definitely. But, you know, push through. This is what everyone does. And so I was in between jobs and I went off and did, I just decided to do a yoga teacher training, as you do. It was 3 weeks in Spain in this beautiful farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. And so that was my first real deep introduction to meditation. And actually, the most benefit I got was really from the yoga part, so the moving meditation. And it was like, whoa, my body is reacting so well to this. I felt calm. And I was like, okay, well, how on earth do I integrate this into my world, into my TV career? Because I had no plans to leave TV then. It was all, you know, that was my world. And anyway, so at that time, I actually hated meditation. the sitting down part and not doing anything. We used to go at 5 o'clock in the morning, every morning, and it'd be like, go and sit and meditate for 30 minutes. Bam. Yeah. That was it. No guidance, no instruction. And so I was left alone with my thoughts, and all I could think was, when is this 30 minutes up?
Yeah.
And so I knew by the end of those 3 weeks, I'm like, there has to be more to this, because people tell me this is a great thing. And yeah. So I started to learn. I was like, I want to understand, how do I get into a meditative state without going mad, because I've just felt like I was going crazy. So I started to go to a local Buddhist center in London where I was living at the time. I started to learn different practices. I started to try apps. You know, more apps are coming out then. It was when I moved to LA was when I actually took a whole new level. Still working in TV. Mm-hmm. But hey, meditation centers and studios are, you know, available. They're on street corners. Yeah. It's like Starbucks here.
It's so wildly accessible.
I know. And so I started to go, actually at this point, I was quite in an emotional place. I've been going through a lot of fertility treatments with my husband. We've been doing on this long journey. And I was in a really personally difficult place. Mm-hmm. And then I started to realize also that meditation was helping me on that scale. It was helping me with the suffering. It was helping me with all the pain we were going through. And from there, I was like, if this can help me through what I'm going through, wouldn't it be amazing to share it with other people? Break it down. It doesn't have to be overwhelming. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to believe in anything. So I went down that path, did my 400-hour teacher training course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I just... I followed my heart, guys. The more I did it, the more I'm like, I'm feeling good from this. And then one day I just decided, okay, I think I'm done with TV.
That's awesome.
I left TV. That's and crazy. It was hard. It was a big identity crisis. That's all I'd known for 20 years, you know. So I went down the path, started teaching at the Den. It was a local studio in LA. Started teaching there every week. And then that just sent me on the path of new courses. Yeah. And from there, I created my speaking course, and that grew. It grew into many other courses. But yeah, that's kind of the pathway.
I love that. How did you get into this, like teaching speaking? Because obviously you're an amazing speaker. We can already tell from these few minutes on the pod. But like, how do you decide, okay, this is what I want to teach people how to do this? And like, I can imagine that would be difficult to do. I don't know. How do you teach people to speak better?
Yeah. So that came from, I had this desire to create my own business. I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. I was like, can you have a meditation business? I was coming with lots of different ideas. And all I kept, worked with a coach, and I was kind of trying to find the thing that I could offer. And I never felt like an expert in anything. That was all of my self-doubt. Like, what could I possibly teach people? I haven't been teaching for 20 years. You know, it was all self-doubt. Anyway, the crux of it was, what is something that I have been through that was really blooming hard? And I managed to work through it, come out the other end. And it was all public speaking. So the journey that I went on with that was, I absolutely hated public speaking. I, as a producer, I had to lead my team. I had to stand there and, you know, be this boss person. And I used to just fill up, like I'd be shaking, I'd be sweating, I'd be like panicking. I'd be looking at them thinking, you think I'm terrible. You think I'm a terrible boss. You think I'm a terrible speaker. It was just, again, just so in my head.
Yeah.
When I moved to LA, again, had a little pivot moment, I decided, I was like, I want to learn to be a good speaker. I would love to be able to hold a room or just not feel so terrified. Mm-hmm. So I took myself along to Denny's Diner, not for breakfast. There was Toastmasters there. So every week at 7 a.m. on a Tuesday, go down to Hollywood Denny's Diner, and I started doing Toastmasters public speaking classes.
Oh my goodness. That's so funny.
And then I was like, okay, I'm going to stick at this. And, you know, as the weeks went by, as the months went by, I got a little bit better, a little bit better. And then I had this opportunity to do a TEDx talk.
Oh, wow.
And at the back of my mind, I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, this would be the ultimate test.
Yeah.
If I could get on a stage and confront my biggest fear and actually do this and survive, what a great achievement. What, you know, it would be amazing. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I did it. And it was honestly one of the most, it wasn't easy, but it was one of the most profound moments. And off the back of that, I felt so much more confident in other areas of my life. And so I remembered that feeling and I thought, if I can share what I learned, not only through public speaking skills, but also with the mindset, everything I was learning with meditation, how do I reduce my public speaking anxiety? I could bring those two worlds together. And that's what I didn't get from Toastmasters. I thought, this is the missing piece. This is how I can really help people in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I love that. I think it's so unique that you kind of mesh the two, because like you said, it's something that, you know, you don't get in a lot of public speaking classes. I was a comm major, so I had a compulsory public speaking class, and it was also the bane of my existence. I hated doing it every single time I went in there. But I think like learning the skills of meditation and, you know, like we did for those of you listening before this podcast, we like sat down and took a couple breaths, just learning how to like control your anxieties and, you know, put yourself in a good mind space, and then also on top of that, how to be a better speaker. It's like the whole package. It's really all you need.
Yeah, I realized, wow, you know, this is such an important life skill. We're never, you know, unless you live in a cave.
I live in a cave.
It's hard to have.
Freelance artists might feel like they live in a cave, to be quite frank.
You're fine, Dave. You're fine. Unless you really do live in a cave, you never have to speak to anyone. Like, speaking skills it's communication skills. It's like, how do I communicate effectively with my colleagues, with my boss, with my clients? Mm-hmm. And so even if you never stand on a stage, you're still going to want to be able to communicate as well as possible.
You have to talk to people in your life. I remember, so I was in advertising for 10 years, which is just as terrible as TV, I'm sure. Well, maybe not quite as cutthroat, but it's kind of the same people. And for anyone I worked with, I'm whatever, you know who you are. Maybe you are a terrible person who I used to work with. but it's tough, right? Because you have to I was an art director, so I had to go into a room with my creative director or a client and pitch an idea. And it's tough to change somebody's mind or convince them of something. And I was not good at it. And I just thought I would eventually get good at it. But even by the end of my career, and that's why I draw pictures now. I mean, obviously I can talk to people, but I'm not very good at like telling somebody an idea that I have. Because in my head, it's grand. And I'm like, well, can't you see it? Like, can't you hear? Like, well, yeah, I can hear you, but like, I don't think we're missing something here. And I could never figure out that middle part. And it was so frustrating. And it's probably why I left, honestly, just because I couldn't get people to understand what I wanted to do. And so I was like, well, I'll freaking draw it then. And then everyone's like, this is great. It's like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, this is what I was trying to express. So yeah, it will help. Like, holy smokes. If I sharpened that skill in the first part of my career, I would have been much happier. It was very painful.
Yeah. I totally relate. And a lot of my clients actually are creatives as well, because of, you know, a lot of people in TV still, and pitching is just such a big one.
Yeah.
Pitching ideas. And it's really, really, you know, you look at some people and you're like, oh, I'll never be, they pitch so well. And there's this assumption that you're either born with it or you're not.
Yep.
And so what I love to be able to, you know, help people realize is that you can learn it. It doesn't have to be impossible. It's not genetic.
Right.
And I had all those assumptions myself, and it doesn't have to be painful. You can actually enjoy the process, you know?
That seems crazy.
And that's the heart to believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jerry Seinfeld has a joke where he said, the number one fear is public speaking. The number two fear is death. So if you're giving the eulogy, no, you'd rather be in the casket than give the eulogy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the one.
It's great. Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, so many people, their biggest fear is getting up there, being exposed. And, you know, I get it. All your thoughts are saying, okay, I'm going to be judged. what if they don't like me?
Yep.
And, you know, I understand it now. I understand why that's there. You know, there's a couple of reasons, and with my courses and my clients, that's that we spend the first part of it understanding, well, what are your mental blocks? What is it that's stopping you? And how do we work through that? How do we not just ignore the fact they're there? Because you have to work through it to then build your confidence. It's not something that you can just, you know, it's not something you just practice and it goes away.
Yeah.
On my experience.
Yeah. Well, just even, you know, talking to you, like, listeners, if you don't know, we are on Google Hangouts right now. And like, your face is full of so much expressiveness and joy. Like, even the way you look, like, holds my attention and carries me through to what you're saying. It's almost as if, and I know you're not, it's not contrived. It's just, you're so good at it. Like, there's joy coming through as you're talking. And I can see it, and I wish I could feel that, but I know I'll never be able to.
Oh, never say never, Dave.
I would love
to take a course.
I would love to be happy all the time, but I don't think it's not for me. But I hope it's for other people.
But you're right. It isn't impossible to be happy all the time. That's something that we shouldn't be striving for, and actually that causes a lot of problems if we're always looking for happiness. If we're always like, oh, but I just, you know, this expectation that, oh, but if I can become a confident speaker, it's just going to be fun all the times. Great speakers know that nerves are natural. Mm-hmm. Great speakers allow anxiety in, and they just, what they do is they transform it to excitement. So they change their beliefs around it. It doesn't disappear. Nerves don't disappear. It's just a different way of looking at it.
And it's
don't let it stop you.
Okay, I won't. And I love what you just said, that that happiness all the time is not possible. And that's such a simple thought, and it's so true, but no one ever says it. It's like, yeah, you're right. Like, it is okay to be pissed off sometimes. What you're talking about, the way you're talking about public speaking, it's funny. I listen to a lot of fighters. I've always liked combat sports. And they talk a lot about what it's like if you listen to them. And it's the same mentality. They're like, there's the nerves, but, you know, like, you start to get ramped up before the fight. And it's like, honestly, I think going into public speaking or going into fighting is very similar.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I agree.
It's two very scary things that a lot of people don't want to do.
But
it feels unnatural.
It's thrilling if you can. I've done some public speaking. I won't get into why, but, you know, I've spoken to a crowd of like 1,300 people before, and it was awesome. Honestly, by the time I was done, because I was prepared, and I don't know if I did well, but I was fine with it because I knew what I was going to say. I delivered it, and I left, and I was like, that was awesome. If you're ready, then it's a good thing. Anyway, I'm rambling enough. We don't want to hear about me. I want to ask you something.
I love it. You mentioned another really important point there, preparation.
Yes.
You know, there's a few things that you just have to have in place before you go into the ring, before you get up there, before you're doing your thing. And I think, and next time you ever have to be in that situation, to know that you can trust yourself. You've been there before, and you remember the feeling afterwards. Hold on to that feeling, because that is like, that's the goal. If you can get through it. Preparation is so important. Rehearsing is important. Yeah. I tell people not to over rehearse, because that quite kind of scripting, you know, the way you kind of like, okay, and the next thing I have to say is that can be obvious.
Yeah.
But there's a few things that you can do to get into that confidence space.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's this is good stuff. I wish we had like 4 hours.
Sorry.
No.
Don't be sorry.
I feel like you think it's your turn to talk, Andre. So why don't you go ahead?
Thanks, bestie. I will.
You take so much my crap. That was rude what I just said, by the way. Please.
It's okay. I came back with some Gen Z vernacular to knock you down a peg.
Wait, what did you say?
Bestie. Bestie.
Oh, yeah. That did make me feel uncomfortable.
Have you heard that? It's okay. This is why we're here. So something that I was thinking about when I was preparing for this episode is one of our values here at CNC, which is health is wealth. And I know it sounds super corny, but we really do believe that like mental, physical, and emotional health is all necessary for you to like grow and for the business to be able to grow. Because at the end of the day, like our business is our people. So I just kind of wanted to hear, like, how have you seen this manifest in your work? And like, how does what you do fit into this idea?
Yeah, I agree completely. It's not corny. It's vital.
Yeah.
It's absolutely vital. And, you know, and I think that driving yourself into a pit of exhaustion, you know, what, like we think about, oh, I've got to do this. I've got all the, my to-do list is so long and I've just got to produce. And it all comes from a place of fear, you know, this need to be successful kind of in some ways. So for me, the way I see it is my number one investment in my business, my happiness, my relationships is my health. Without it, that's the foundation. It has to be, I have to invest time into it. So in the mornings when my mind's like, oh, do I really have to meditate? Maybe I'll just take a day off the Peloton today. And I'm like, I still hear that voice. I still have totally. It. But thankfully I'm in a place where I know, you know, on an innate level that if I don't put the time into taking care of my mind, my mental health, my physical health, it's like, where are you going to get the energy to work? Where are you going to get the energy to care for your family and friends? Where are you going to get the energy? You know, energy and health is everything. So it's my mantra. I teach it in all my courses. You know, it's the foundation for all of the work that whenever anyone works with me, you know, I'm always talking about the benefits. I talk about the science behind meditation. I talk about, you know, what is going on in the brain and your body when you're doing this to help people get it.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, you go, oh, well, I hear it's good. I know it's supposed to be good. But yeah. I like to, you know, reinforce the understanding of why. And I agree completely.
That's great. Yeah. And I think that's something that is really important for me, because I am definitely somebody that, like, if an idea is too nebulous, I can't buy into it. Like, I really struggle with the, just doing something because I know it's, like, supposed to be good for me. And I think it's so important to have that, like, okay, but why is it good for you? And like, why, like, what are the actual benefits?
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful that you prioritize that, because I am definitely one of those people that, like, if you don't tell me why it's good, I'm like, I'm fine.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's just the way my mind works. I like to, and you know, if I'm sitting in class and someone mentions, okay, this is what's happening in your brain right now, I'm kind of like, oh, that's cool. And then I get into it more. Really, the only way of it learning, true learning, comes from experience. But you have to be motivated to try it in the first place. You have to be motivated to do it consistently as well, because that's where it gets hard. You know, your brain or your mind is saying, I want to stick to what's familiar. This is this new thing we're doing. Oh, is it really going to work? You know, there's so much resistance and doubt. Yeah. And actually with creativity and freelance in the freelance world, as a creative myself, I would definitely feel a lot of that resistance. Understanding why it's important, and then creating the habit, sticking at it long enough to change, to rewire, to change the neurological pathways.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear the wrong way to do it? So this is it this week? I guess this week and some of last week, I tend to go kind of long I'm always in here. I'm always in this room. And we're going to get to this. I don't want to, you know, we're going to talk about this. But it's not good. And if I go too hard and I stay up too late, like that energy you're talking about, obviously gone. But it can really affect you. Like I had lunch planned with my buddy and I had a commitment last night. And my lunch with my friend was the day before yesterday, and then this commitment last night. When I committed to him, I was fine. But I was so sapped of energy that I couldn't fathom. Like, I told my friend, like, we had dinner with them. It's like, I can't show up tonight, dude. Like, this sounds weird, but I would just sit there. I would just sit there and I'd want to not be there. And it's tough to tell people that if you're injured or, like, you know, you have a different thing going on. But basically it's like, I screwed up. I totally ran myself into the ground. I was irresponsible with my sleep schedule. I can't have dinner with you. It really can affect you. And then last night, I forgot about this thing. Because again, if you don't get sleep, your brain doesn't work. And and so
crazy.
I had to take a nap during that time. And it's like, Dave, dude, like, your life, you got to remember, like, your life falls apart when you don't get sleep. It really does. It's like walls made of wet toilet paper in the house of your life. Just like, everything's falling apart. Why? So that's a lesson for you listeners. Get some sleep. If you think you're cool or that you're going to, like, impress your boss, or that, like, the hard workers stay up till 3 a.m., they don't.
Snappy. I'm doing it for others as well, not just for my benefit. But yeah, sleep is, you know, we know there's a lot of studies around sleep, and it's the quality of sleep, right? So it's another great reason why I love meditation, is because I get to go into a deeper sleep. I get to have, you know, the good REM and know that I'm not going to keep waking up, or I can fall asleep more easily. I often do a meditation before bed to help support that. And, you know, I don't know, maybe because I've got older, it's something that I've been more careful around. It's something that I care about more. And also because I see the impact. In fact, if I'm a mess the next day, yeah, my work suffers, my friendship suffers. But in that situation that you had with your friend, how do you feel afterwards? Like, if you have to cancel your friend and you have to, like, not, if you're not working so great, do you notice the thoughts in your mind about that?
Yeah. Like, well, it's weird because on one hand, I feel bad because I do this a lot, because I'm always working and I really like what I do. Like, it's so, I would rather stay in here and draw pictures. But I hate having to invent it, like, a different way of saying it each time, you know, like, oh, I have client work. And this time it was like, you know, so it makes me feel bad about me. And then, but it's starting to swing the other way where, like, I'm like, well, I don't want to explain myself. Why should I have to explain myself? I just don't want to go. Like, these are all very bad things. And if I wasn't self-aware, I wouldn't know that, like, it makes me feel bad and I should get rid of that. And then if I let it swing the other way where I start to get prideful and I think I don't have to explain myself to people, I just got stuff to do. Like, don't, like, I'm not going to be there. Like, why do you have to know? Then you're just a dick. And
the amount of energy that takes up, that, like, swinging back and forth, the sort of like, oh, but I know I've got, this is my priority. And oh, but now you put on, you a bad person. It's like, then it's such a vicious cycle, because it then is. you're adding a layer. You're adding layers of shame and guilt and anger on top of something that you're not feeling so proud about. But it's like, it just gets deeper and deeper, and we don't do ourselves any favors. Really, in a dream world, it's having the capacity to say, yeah, you know what? I messed up. It's been a bit of a pattern. I'm not going to keep beating myself up about it, but maybe I can, try one thing to shift out of this.
Yeah.
Maybe one time I'm going to commit to that person, and no matter what, I'm just going to really, you know, honor that commitment. And I think it's a gradual process, and then seeing, okay, how did that feel? Oh yeah, it was really nice. It was amazing to see that through, rather than go through my old ways. But old patterns, it takes a long time to change them. That's the thing.
Does.
But you can do it. It's not impossible. It's just about saying, I'm going to put the effort in.
Yes. And just so our listeners and you guys don't think I'm a terrible person, like, this guy sounds like he would suck to be married to, you know, like, my wife is very happy. No, actually, I have a note about her and how she helps me. I for a while now, especially, well, when I went freelance, like, I didn't realize I was going to be running my own business. So I, you know, I'm really, there's a lot to do. And I, about a year after I met Drew, actually, he was the one that's like, dude, you got to figure this out. Like, you got to have time for other things. And I've tried what you're talking about. It's like, I'm going to honor this commitment. Every time I show up, I'm fine. I enjoy the experience. Even if I'm a little loopy, her. I'm just like, what is that? Like, Dave, it's a wallet. Like, oh, I'm really tired. I couldn't see. I don't know why I used that as an example. Anyway, I've been trying that. Like I don't want to say fake it till you make it, but just honoring the commitment. And it's usually fine. It's when I am insanely tired, which I've been this week, that I start to cut out. But yeah, it's a bad way to be. And my wife, the way she plays into what you're talking about is she's really good at support and kind of knowing my crazy process. I'm like any other artist. I'm like, just let me figure this out. But there's a certain point where she throws in the towel and she's like, okay, Dave, like what, like 4 a.m. for like two straight weeks? Like, let's pull it back. It's like, okay. And she just did that recently. So I don't want to say you want to depend on other people, but it's great to have somebody.
It is useful. And my husband does the same for me. You know, I'll get into little bad habits and he'll be like, oh, do you know, just notice that you do it. And I'm like, oh yeah. I'm kind of slipped into that one, didn't I? You know, it's so easy to do that. But I also say that I think that like in that moment, when you're exhausted, look after yourself. I think there's also this fear of being selfish. And I'm all for, you have to look after yourself first. That is the most selfless thing to do. If you're tired,
I love that.
Sleep.
Yeah.
If you need to cancel because you're exhausted and you're not going to be a good friend in the conversation, do it. It's like, you have to look after yourself first. You can address the reasons why it happened, but in that moment, it is an act of self-care to say no. Mm-hmm. And I feel guilty all the time if I have to cancel friends. But I always remember, you know, I'm going to be a much better friend. I'm going to be a much better wife. I'm going to be much better in my work if I look after myself first. It is not selfish.
Yeah, I love that. That makes me feel better. And in the end, unless it's a big deal, like, hey, dude, you were going to give like the toast at my wedding and now you can't, like that's different, but people understand. People know what you're up against. And I try to be, you know, I tell my friends when I start a huge project, like, you're not going to see me probably for a month. Just, you know, set expectations, but it still feels bad. So you think they care. You think they get off the phone. It's like, I hate that guy. Anyway, I love that though. Self-care is would you say the least selfish thing you can do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Being selfish is a selfless act to care for yourself first, to put the oxygen mask on first, to say, I'm not going to that dinner because I'm tired or I just want to stay in and recharge, you know, whatever it is. Don't add layers of guilt and shame on top of, you know, you're feeling bad for canceling on situations, as long as it's not, you know, the repetitive and you're actually really, you know, you haven't showed up for the wedding.
Yeah.
You know, it's case by case, but I think it's important to not add those layers on top.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's tough with, I put my phone in sleep mode 24/7 and I check it when I want to, because if I leave it on, like the Instagram notifications, the Marco Polos, the texts, the Slacks. It's a freaking jingle jangle good time in my office all day. It's like ding, bang, ding. Like it's frustrating and it gets super distracting. So I think also it's okay to say no when so many people have access to you. They've got to realize, or I hope they realize, like, dude, you're not the only one hitting me up, you know, like. There's a lot of people I bet you probably get hit up for stuff so often. It's insane. Your friends want to hang out with you. People want to jump on a call with you. People want to hire you for something. I mean, I'm not fun to be around. And for some reason, people are constantly trying to be around me. So for you, it's probably a circus. But anyway.
Oh, no, I think that's a really, the notification thing. Yeah. Set those boundaries. It's designed to just draw you away, distract. So that's I did the same thing. I took it all off my phone, put it on airplane mode. So tempting to do it otherwise if you don't set that up for yourself.
Yeah. I have a buddy, my best friend, he'll text me and then like I'll look at my my phone. It'll be like, yeah, text from 4 hours ago, and then he'll send a cricket. And I'm like, dude, I've told you this. Like, I don't check texts, and I always have to remind him. But anyway, enough about. I'm starting to feel bad about my behaviors.
Feeling bad.
Yeah. So let's get into this, how we can turn like the way these bad feelings into something great. So on your website, and I know it's lame to pull questions from your site, but I seriously was like blown away with just like these bullet points. I was like, wow, this is life-changing stuff. So just for our listeners, this is one of your courses, correct? Mm-hmm. And these are the things that you address in this course. Mindfulness, slow down to get more done. Amazing. Train your brain to let go of anxiety and have more joy. And then 3, turn your deepest pain into your greatest purpose. And that one really caught my attention. I think as artists, like this is where like all things converge and the reasons why we make art. But I feel like artists still can't identify their pain, much less like wield a purpose through that art form. So I was hoping that in a general sense, if this is possible, you can kind of speak to how we can kind of turn that pain into power or purpose, because I think It's so key for a lot of artists.
Oh, definitely. Yes, absolutely. So in my experience, it was, I think that the greater lessons were really, no matter what the most challenging moments throughout my life, so whether it's grieving, family death, whether it's going through ongoing fertility battle journey, the sort of constant failing, the grieving of not having a biological baby. Moments like that, I always remember being in the moment and being like, I do not want to be here. I do not like this. This is not fun. I want to be happy all the time. this is, why this isn't fair. It brought up all of the emotions and the qualities that I really did not like in myself: jealousy, bitterness, anger, sadness, feeling weak. And anyway, so the aim was to get rid of it. How do I get rid of this feeling? Don't like it. So for me, it would be I would use food. Alcohol, I would use, other substances or excuses, distract myself. Mm-hmm. And kind of being on the other side of it now, looking back, actually those moments in my life, they weren't a problem. They weren't something that to get rid of. And they drove me to find other ways. So it wasn't just, went down the slope of I definitely went through overeating times. I said alcohol, but it didn't work. So eventually I had to learn how to process that emotion, work through it. And then it also led me to find ways to heal. I'm like, how do I find ways to truly heal my heart? I'm in this like heartbroken place, and if I'm not doing anything about it, or if I'm making it worse, how's I supposed to transform this pain? Anyway, so it's kind of like been a theme for me. Going through those experiences led me also into meditation. They drove me to find, I read a lot of self-help books. I started to understand the layers of pain and suffering. So I started to learn that, okay, pain is part of being human. It's not something to be banished. And it changes like the seasons. It doesn't stay around forever. It's the same way joy and happiness and all those experiences come and go. Suffering, the good news though, was I learned that suffering was not, I was trying to find the word, it was not essential. Suffering is, you can transform suffering. You don't have to live in a place of suffering. So when it comes to art and creativity, it's the same thing. It's about knowing that if you are experiencing pain in your life, that is something that it's an energy, right? So you either, where do you channel that energy? Do you channel it into your work? Do you channel it into good? Or do you sit in a place of suffering and add more layers of pain on top of the situation you're in? So it's a bit of a broad, it depends what that person is going through.
Yeah.
But, I just personally realized that, and in the end, when it came to, especially around fertility, that was actually the topic I spoke about in my TEDx talk. it was something that I was really ashamed of for a long time. But when I owned it, when I wrote it down on a piece, you know, when I wrote the words, when I wrote my story, and that's something I teach in my speaking courses, you know, how do we tell our story? How do we own our story so it doesn't feel like we're a victim? So it doesn't feel like, you know, why me? Why is this happening to me? And what's beautiful is quite therapeutic, is when you know how to carve your story and either speak it or, you know, write it in a book or write it in a blog, whatever, you know, create it through your work, paint it, you can turn it into something positive. And you can use that as a drive for your purpose. So for me, I started to see that if I shared my story, no matter how painful and shameful or whatever I was feeling, I can help people with this. There are people out there who are in the same position. And if I'm honest about it, there is at least one person out there who will benefit, who will feel less alone, who will, feel less isolated, who will feel they have some support. And that's what drove me. That's what was kind of like my deeper purpose. I'm like, I can do something good with this. And I did. And I really did turn it from a horrible situation into something that felt powerful to me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my journey.
Wow. That is... Thank you for sharing that with us, because that's not a light trial, by the way. You know, children are why the universe is a happy place, and they're the biggest blessing in my life. And the fact that you can say now that you, and I don't know your full story, but that you have some peace in the midst of such a ferocious storm, or a painful storm, I should say, is incredible. You said some things that I'm always happy when I do things that are like things you should do that are like listed in books. And it really does help to write down, face it head on. More than like, I don't know, being a good artist, I'm deeply concerned with being a good man. I want that above all. And I want to be a good husband and a good dad. And the other day, I kind of was just hit by these thoughts of like some things I wasn't facing. And I wrote them down. And holy smokes, was that powerful for me to read them back. And not in the place of beating myself up, but just like, Dave, take care of these things. It really is essential. If I'm kind of interpreting what you said the right way, or I'm listening because I have ADD, and you know, but you do have to identify the pain. You can pick up a guitar, you can sing it out, but I still feel that's a little bit like drinking alcohol. Like you still have to, and maybe that's the way you identify it, right? Like when Eric Clapton wrote that song about the death of his son. Gosh, that's a sad story. I read all about it this one day, and it was like, because I was like, well, how did this happen? Don't read how it happened. If you're out there, also don't watch Sophie's Choice. This one day I was like, hey, why is it called Sophie's Choice? And I YouTubed the clip, and it destroyed me. It's the worst thing that's ever happened in a movie. Anyway, don't watch Sophie's Choice. But what was my point? What was I saying?
Writing down your pain.
Yeah. Dang it, there was a sub thought. Anyway, I can't remember what I was going to say, but that's the main point, is writing down what you
and
need
that,
to fix.
Like, sometimes just art isn't always.
Sorry, Andrea. Yeah.
Go for it.
Eric Clapton, that helped him, right? Like, it doesn't always help to scream it out with a punk rock song, but there was this comment in the YouTube video about the song he wrote. And it's devastating. Somebody says, how does he not weep every time he plays this? And somebody responded, the song is him weeping. And and it's like, okay, that helped him. So it's not everyone's Eric Clapton and a master of expression that way. I think most of us, this was my point. Good grief. I think most of us still have to face the problem like head on deal with it. And then maybe you can make some art, or maybe it can help. But I know it's a sin to say this to our community, but art alone, I don't think will elevate you to where you need to be. There needs to be some practical mm-hmm. steps, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I would have to agree.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bum you guys out.
No, I think it was lovely. Well, and I don't want to keep Simone for too long because I know we've all got things to do and things to get to, but I really do appreciate this conversation. I think it was, you know, I feel like we could talk for literally hours about everything and anything because what you do is really so helpful, especially yes. for, maybe not especially, but as like for creatives as well. Like it's just something that I think is very hard to think about when you're, you know, constantly creating and you have this crazy freelance lifestyle, but it's something that's really important to keep in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I was just thinking about what you said about Eric Clapton and his the song. In some ways, you know, that process of writing it and turning it into this beautiful song that touched so many people's hearts, like that was a way of also him it's kind of like owning the story, but also again he's turned it into something yeah. like a gift. He turned that mm-hmm. story, whatever happened, his pain, into a beautiful gift for people. Yeah. And like yeah, just sorry, I was just actually really like getting into that story and thinking, wow, no, what an amazing thing to do. And even though yeah he might cry every time, I feel like he probably cries, it's probably tears of gratitude, you know, rather yeah. than the loss. There's different types of tears and there's different types of emotion, and to go through that and actually come out the other side and be like, wow, you know, that's the gift that I have for the world because of the pain I went through.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you nailed, sorry. One more, because, like this isn't like from beginning to end. And it's another musician. So, real quick, Eddie Vedder wrote a song called Alive in 1991. And if you don't know, it's a messed up story. When he was 13, his mom was like, your dad, the guy in the other room, that's not your dad. And he's like, what? Like he's dying in a hospital and you should probably go say goodbye to him. And so he's like, thanks mom. Holy hell. Like you suck. The world is a dark place. And he wrote this song. I'm still alive, but I kind of wish I wasn't. However, years later in an interview, he said that song was once a curse. It's now a gift. And I'm grateful to be alive. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm, yeah.
That love beautiful. That story. Oh.
Yeah.
Now we all have to go listen to that song.
Yeah. Well, I always thought he was like, oh, I'm still alive. But it's sarcasm. Like the when he wrote it, it was out of anger. But it was like it was always destined to be good because it's in a major key and it's just really triumphant. So it's just, you know, some serendipitous yeah. things worked out musically to also make it yeah. what it became.
Beautiful. I don't teach people how to write music or anything, but when they, you know, with my speaking course that I do, I teach people how to go through the process of doing a TED style talk. So they all yeah. write, you know, the storytelling skill, they all write their story. And actually it's crazy when the last day when we all speak, when everyone stands up and speaks their story, the amount of emotion that people are crying, you know, mm-hmm. watching it, is because we really get into those stories that they have probably kept hidden, that they haven't mm-hmm. been so, I don't know, brave, or that they felt shame around, whatever's going on. And to bring light to it, to shine light on it, is a beautiful process to watch. So, yeah, it's kind of like similar, but in a different way.
No, that's, gosh, everything in the universe is pointing at some very specific things for me lately. Like what you just said is a big one. But there's so many things. But the question that I have for you, and I know we have to go, but maybe you could speak to it really quickly. It's like we want to tap into your wisdom while we have you, you know?
Yeah, we'll do quick fire.
Yeah, yeah. So this slowing down to do more. Obviously, when I was talking earlier about my troubles lately, I'm not slowing down at all. I'm going too fast. And holy smokes, do I not get enough done. It's crazy. I mean, mostly, like, sometimes it's just, like, 3 in the morning. I'm like, what was I doing? Was I drawing? And I had to work through like this old man fog, Alzheimer's, like pre-Alzheimer's feeling. Like, this is no way to work. So I know that part of it, but what's the nutshell of this slowing down to get more done, or however you want to explain it? Sorry.
Yeah. Actually, it's quite simple, actually. When you think about it, the brain, you know, like as I mentioned before, there's a lot of energy that's consumed, whether you're working, thinking, trying to make decisions. Slowing down to get more done, slowing down is really just saying, I'm going to give my brain a moment to pause. When it's in a stressful place, when it's in stress, you know, sometimes that feels motivating. Sometimes it's like, whoa, pressure, deadlines, you know, especially in freelance.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's easy to get swept up in that. But if you know that my brain will function at its optimum when it is not in that stressful place, we did 3 breaths together this morning before we started. Little moments like that can go a long way.
Yeah.
So if I can tell my brain, I'm not in a dangerous place right now, which is often what we interpret stress as, unfortunately. We're like, oh, there's a danger. So the brain is like, then says, well, I need to focus on that. I need to focus on being alert or being fight, flight, freeze. And my brain is saying, okay, if I'm stressed, I need to focus on that. So then it has less energy to be creative. Yeah. It is not in a creative place when it's stressed. So if you say to yourself, hang on, if I want to be creative and I want to be productive, if I can give my brain a few moments to calm, to slow down, then I know that long term, I'm going to get more done. I'm going to be able to focus. I'm going to have more clarity around what I'm doing. And plus, I'm not going to be distracted as easily. I can sit on the side for 2 minutes. Anyone can take 2 minutes to take a moment. Notice how you feel when you come back. Do I feel more clear-minded? Do I feel a little more at ease? Do I feel more motivated? You know, you are your own investigator. But that's really the crux of it. A stressed mind does not want to be creative. A stressed mind does not like to have, is not able to focus, is not able to be clear. Mm. So that's it. And you say, well, I want to be productive. Let's work with my brain. Let's support it. It's, you know, it's the fuel.
Good grief, that was a good explanation. Andre, when you were talking about like health is wealth, but it has like how things have to, you can't just buy the snake oil, like break it down for me. I've always heard this like, slow down, you know, just think that it'll help. It's like, but how? Your explanation of how we're using so much energy in our brain to manage the stress, of course it's going to impede on the creativity. I've never heard it put like that before. That's fantastic. Like, see, now that's motivating for me. That now Dave can step away for a moment and not feel like, guys, I got to keep doing this. Like, I should have gone to dinner with my friend. I needed to step away.
The intervention worked, Dave.
Woo! No, I am the...
We got through to you.
If you have, like, things that help fix your life, I am the poster boy. Like, it's amazing that I have the life I have because I just take, like, shotguns to my feet all the time. I don't have any toes. They've all been blown off.
Love that. Love to hear it. Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap us up because I know we all got places to be, things to do. But last question, Simone, is just let our listeners know where they can find you.
Yes. Well, if you are interested in anything that we spoke about today, I'd love to hear from you. I'm a very friendly person. So you can email me. You can go to my website, simonetai.com. I'm sure that you probably have links and things. I'm on Instagram, yep. Simone_Tai_. Okay, I need to work on that. But anyway, yes, no, please do reach out. My next speaking program coming up at the end of August, early September. It will be a small group. I have an intimate group. We go through a 6-week program to transform your speaking skills. So if that is of interest to you, I'd love to tell you more about it. And please reach out if there's anything else.
Beautiful. Thanks, thank you so much, Simone. Awesome. CNC artists, get in that course if you can. Yeah. I would love to see you guys there. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You're
this
welcome.
Was great.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it felt like a fun chat.
Thanks for tuning in to the Closer and Closer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to receive the latest episodes. You don't want to miss some of the incredible conversations that we have coming up. They'll be full of powerful insight to help you reach your full creative potential. To find out more about us, visit www.closerandcloser.co.